People might think that my Munster hat is too Munster. Got to get into a position where we're rewarding form as opposed to credit in the bank.
The Red 78 with Alan Quinlan and Niamh Briggs. Subscribe to the Rugby channel on the OTB Sports app and turn on your notifications now.
Wednesday Night Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us, everyone in.
Very welcome along, Wednesday Night Rugby. We've loads to get through. Very happy to say Gordon Darcy's joined us. Hello, Mr. Darcy.
How are we getting on?
And Mr. Keith Wood as well. Hey, Keith.
Hey, Joe. How are you doing?
Yeah, very well. Looking forward to these internationals over the next couple of weeks. So Japan this Saturday, then New Zealand and Argentina to come. Gordon, we might kick things off in a slightly different point of emphasis, but it was just one you made in the Irish Times today, given that the focus will be very much on the international game over the next few weeks. And with the United Rugby Championship now, those fringe players in particular at the various provinces won't have much rugby to play. And you were saying, why don't we forge a stronger bond with the AIL and get more players playing more games instead of doing reps in the gym?
Yeah, like it's, you know, like obviously with the game getting cancelled last week, you're just kind of having to think about what games are going on over the weekend. And, you know, lo and behold, it was the AIL. So I had, you know, optimistically high hopes that there was going to be an awful lot of the senior professionals playing, and there really wasn't. I just felt it's an opportunity missed. You know, there's some guys in the senior squads in around the provinces have played less than 100 minutes and were the 1st of November. So I've been a big advocate for the club game as much as I possibly can. And until we start incorporating it into the, I suppose, properly into the rugby pyramid, you know, we're not going to get enough games. And I just think this is an opportunity that went to begging. Hopefully this weekend we see a few more coming into it. But like the standard of club rugby, it can only be improved by players of, you know, the higher standards coming down and playing. Like, and I use the example of Aaron Smith, who's not touring with the All Blacks at the moment, and he's at home playing NPC.
So you were playing relatively recently. To what extent did it happen in your day?
Well, like when Keith was standing on me at the bottom of rucks, cheap shotting me at the bottom of rucks, we had probably 12 club games, which are provincial games at that time, and the balance was made up with the AIL. The AIL was incredibly high standard at that time, and as the games in the provinces started increasing, the requirements for the clubs started dropping off. So probably, like the last time, 2008 was probably the last time, 2009 was the last time I played. I needed games before the Six Nations, the year we won the Grand Slam. And I asked Decky and said, listen, can I play for Lanzarote this weekend? And he said, yeah, okay. And I do think that helped. And it got me into his mind when he was picking that 22, that that I needed to be involved in the match day. But probably 2003, 2004 was probably when the club game started being the role the club game played in the professional setup started to wane.
Keith, would you agree with Gordon? This is a good thing to do.
Yeah, I do. Well, I think it depends on the age and the age profile. It depends on how many games you've played. Look, I would say that so many young players, and especially in the last 2 years because of COVID, haven't had the opportunity to play. And if they do progress up to a provincial setup, they need to play games, as many games as they can get under their belt. And I know we'll have a bit of a discussion later on sometimes what happens with too many games. But if you're 25 or 6 years of age playing for Ireland, you may not want to be playing AIL. You may not need to be playing AIL. It may not be entirely fair on the AIL players you're playing against. But if you're trying to get into the squads and you're in the senior squads, if you're not involved at the weekend, if you don't have an injury, if there isn't a very specific reason, if there isn't a very specific reason for you not to play, I think the players should be playing in all the AIL matches. So whatever way you can manoeuvre the players who aren't in the 24, 25, 26 that are probably required when you're going to play a big match, the rest of those guys should be playing AIL.
Yeah, because to be fair, I think it is happening in pockets, Gordon. I saw Jack Crowley playing for Corcon against Clontarf, and this was the week before he played a 10 then for Munster. And I'm sure it was a great run out for him. And that was all done in conjunction with both club and province. And it worked a treat.
Yeah, I would say he is probably not the norm, I would think. Like, I had a look through the Munster squad at the weekend because they actually published the numbers of who played what. So they had eight senior players play AIL. They have two overseas players, and that left a squad of 40. I think anyway, went right into the numbers, and there was 30 players not playing. Mm. So Jack Crowley has had 60 minutes for Munster. If he wasn't playing for AIL, if he wasn't playing AIL, like, what's he doing? You know, he's not the only one. Like Ben Healy, as again has, you know, featured in two match day 23s. Why wouldn't he be playing AIL? Like that's the bit I don't understand.
Is the answer to that question they don't feel it's of a good enough standard to be of benefit?
But they should be forcing the standard. Like you can go in, like you don't have to go in and, you know, try to play as you would play in a professional game. You can go in and play a different type of game that suits the way you're going to do. If you're Ben Healy going in, you know, your distribution game, you can focus on aspects. And I don't mean this in a, I suppose, looking down on the AIL, but if you are an elite player, you are there because you are the best of what you've done at various points, you should be able to maintain a standard very, very easily and focus on an aspect of a game that you might be able to want to develop, be it offloading, be it your kicking game, your defense, something. And that will naturally increase the game. And if you're looking down, if you're saying it's not of a high enough standard, but then you should just be the best player on the pitch without having to really break stride. Mm.
Yeah, fair point.
Yeah, I would jump in on all of that too. I think we probably will see Ben Healy playing this weekend. You know, there's a good chance of that happening. And I think it's like Gary Owen-Corcoran this weekend could be Crowley against Ben Healy, which would make for additional spice for a game, which would be fantastic. Mm. There is that sense of it. I mean, I played a couple of AIL games when I came back and played for Munster. And at that stage, there was a fairly huge jump between the standard very quickly, because you suddenly had people who were training professionally all the time. It was hard. Plus, I was at the end of my career. I didn't enjoy it. I didn't enjoy that. I played 37 games that season. I didn't really need the extra couple of games that I played AIL, you know. But that's the difference. It's the difference, the different people that are going in. But if you look at Ben Healy at his age, Jack Crowley at his age, they need to play rugby. Like there's these guys, when they go to the end of the season, how many minutes have they racked up? How many matches have they played? Like these guys aren't burnt out and fatigued. And of course, there's lots of training and different stresses and all that stuff. But let them play a bit of rugby. And we want everybody to get back excited in it as well. You know, so you want guys walking through the turnstiles in all the club grounds as much as you possibly can at the moment. It's still outside. It's still a great place to be.
Yeah, very true. So to matters at hand, we're assuming tomorrow when the team is named, Johnny Sexton will win his 100th test cap. Gordon Darcy, you stood just outside him for many games. I'm sure him barking at you was a theme of your life for the second half of your career. I'm curious if we take a moment of reflection. Can you remember when you realised he was a bit special?
There's not a moment. There's just series of moments, and I suppose they grew in importance, or not in importance. They just grew in value. You know, every time one of the milestones was reached. Like, I remember his first game was down in Musgrave Park, and we got absolutely hosed by Munster, and we playing on the back foot playing on the back foot against a pack, and he wasn't able to get us on the front foot. But the very next time he goes out and plays, you're going, oh, that didn't faze him. He's just brushed it off and he's already on to the next piece. You know, when he comes on for Felipe and hits the ground running, like it's the ability for somebody, I suppose, when you know they're special, is that when they're taking what they've done on the training field and in the most high-pressure environment, just turn it on. That's when you kind of go, wow, this is pretty special. Yeah.
Can I ask you then, that 09 Croke Park moment, I think, is when the wider world realised. When he was jogging onto the pitch and Kontopomi was going off injured, was he of a certain calibre in your estimation at that stage that you had no real worries here, that you thought, wait till everyone sees what this kid's about to do? Or did you have a question mark then?
I had no question marks with him. And okay, one of the reasons why I had no question mark with him was, it was probably 12, maybe it was is in that season at some point, and or might have been the previous season with Keith Gleeson. And Gleeson was, you know, struggling with injury at that point and was just being a little bit ratty on the field. And Sexto went for him. And there was nothing. There was like, and we had to literally pull them off each other. And if hadn't got in as we think, punches were going to go, and it wasn't going to be he was going for him, for your number 10 to be kind of going that passionate about what we're trying to do. And like Keith Gleeson was a pretty impressive physical specimen of that. Like he was a big, strong back row, and it just didn't faze him, and he just went for it. So we got to see all those moments like him, all the kicks, the special, the passing. You know, when he stood in for Felipe, it was the ball was where you expected to be. Like when we had that move to which I ended up scoring, which that was all built off of Brian's fade and the pass being exactly where it needed to be on Brian's fade, and then a decision out wide: do you hit either short or do you go out the back to me? That pass was on the absolute money, and he had no game time to prep that. So when a guy hits the straps like that, and I think Keith, you would have probably had much more experience with players like that, when they come on and they hit their straps almost immediately, the energy that it gives the team because they know how good he is.
Keith, I'm reading Keith Earls' book at the moment. He's going to be on the show for a chat about the book, and he has played with all the great players in Irish rugby over the last 15 years or so. And he makes a point of saying, and you know, it's not like he was forced to, but he comes out in the book and he says, the best player I played with, and he saw Pico Driscoll and O'Connell and whoever else you want to mention, the best player was Johnny Sexton. The rugby brain was off the charts, is what he said, as to, you know, further to Gordon's point. And 100 caps now, the boy's done good.
Yeah, well, it's funny, I look at him and we kind of, there's been criticisms with him over the last period of time, and that's only because we know exactly the standard that he hit. So I remember watching that game that Gordon referenced, and what I loved about it, and a few different times in his career, actually a lot of times in his career, was he took over games. So I'd always say it, you want your 10 to be the boss in the field. He doesn't have to be the captain, but he has to be the guy that pulls all the strings. And that's part of it. In fact, I often think they shouldn't be captain because they've so much on their plate, but that they should pull all the strings. They should direct where the game should go. And at different times, Rog was able to do that. And, you know, the game changed towards the very end of his career, where his probing kicking game wasn't as effective anymore because people were dropping players back. It would be incredibly effective again now. But at that moment of that time, that was the right time for him. He was 24 when he really started, Sexton. But he imposed himself on an awful lot. And I would have said he gave so much to the players outside him because, and you're dead right, Keith Earls would love him. He scored an awful lot of tries at the end of his passes or the end of his plays. But there was a lot of space that was made at that moment in time. And if it wasn't on, he'd have a cut himself, and he'd a fair bit of pace at that stage. So, look, I think to get to 100 caps is it's a crazy number. It's only great players that do it, and I think it's an astounding achievement because he's had a huge amount of injuries. Yes, he's old, and he's been around for a long time, but he has won everything in the game. So, like every time we get critical about him, because we're critical for fear, actually. We're afraid of what's going to happen when he's not there. We're afraid of what's going to happen if we have an old out half going into a World Cup, if he doesn't have the pace and all that sort of stuff. Like, it isn't criticizing him, it's kind of criticizing the system more than any of it, because there should be an heir apparent. There should have been 5 heir apparents in the last 12 or 13 seasons. So and none of them have quite come up to muster, and we need them, actually. So that becomes part of the story.
Yeah. When you said won everything there, I just had a flashback to a charity night you had a couple of years ago after he had won World Player of the Year, and you were there and he was there, and there was a chat going on, and he said, you know, he was delighted to be the only Irish player to have won World Player of the Year. And obviously Keith's won it. And he said, no, I'm talking the modern era.
Yes, I know. Yeah, he was quite happy to give me a kick in the shins when he could. I mean, he's Balshi. All 10s are Balshi. he backs it up. He's a pretty big guy as well. So I still wouldn't stop me giving him a little tickle in the ring.
So to get to then Ireland, Gordon, the downside maybe of having somebody as dominant and brilliant as Johnny is that he's so important and so crucial that opposition players have openly said, you know, last couple of Six Nations, well, look, we felt if we stopped Johnny, we could stop Ireland. So more creativity in the side is important. That brings us to full back, but it brings us to the centres as well. Brian O'Driscoll was on with Nathan this morning, and his latest podcast, it's available exclusively on the OTB app for the next 24 hours. But he was talking about the Irish centres. No Robbie Henshaw available, or certainly on Saturday and probably for the remainder of the November International. So it's looking like it'll be Bundy, Aki and Ringrose. O'Driscoll was saying that, you know, all being well and everybody being fit, Henshaw, of course, goes in at 12. And then he felt for creativity, you would have Gary Ringrose in there as your best bet. But I just want to play a clip. He was talking more generally about where Ringrose is. I'd be curious to get your thoughts on the Ireland centres in a moment.
It does feel that as much as we've got high expectations for Gary Ringrose, he just needs to get one rung further than where he has been. And
what is it? What is it that brings him that extra rung?
I think probably bringing in other players. As I said, you know, for me, the only hang up that I look at is that if in doubt, he tucks and goes himself. I think there's still an ability to be able to pass and trail and link play up a little bit more. But when he's at his best, when he's fit and strong and elusive, you see how many tries he does pick up for Leinster, less so for Ireland. But that's just about having a big engine, about reading the game well, about being a support runner rather than being the focal point yourself, of ducking back inside, you know, throw the pass. And one thing I did watch with Japan is their comfort in throwing the pass to one another in traffic, in close proximity. I think that is a really impressive trait of theirs, that they're not, they never get scared into tucking and going and taking the easy option as defence is
wanted. We spoke about that a lot in 2019 as well, that Japan were doing that. Like, is that just a skill set issue or is that a mindset issue?
I think it's probably a bit of both. I must say, I watching the summer as well, I think the quality of passing and the ability to do that from Ireland has improved. I think the offloading game has undoubtedly improved. Their willingness to look for the pass, even though it mightn't always be on. Passing under pressure, making sure that it's, a ball is out in front. These are small aspects and important aspects you might take for granted, but you don't always get it. So I do think that there were really positive traits from the two summer games, albeit there was lots of errors, you know, mixed in there as well. So what is it? I think it's just a practice piece, but it's all well and good doing it against opposition in Carton House or in the the new facility, but you've got to do it against top quality opposition that are really pressing hard. And whatever about the way Japan defend, New Zealand's defensive setup has changed dramatically. They're having shooters, they're having guys squaring up from the outside in, reading through. So you're going to have to really get your passing game on point to make sure that you're going to break down and get the edges if they present themselves.
Brian O'Driscoll there, chatting to Nathan, and his podcast available exclusively on the OTB Sports app for the next 24 hours or so. All with thanks to Vodafone, official sponsor of the Irish rugby team of us, everyone in. So Gordon, I'm curious for your thoughts on any of that, but we might start with the centres. Henshaw's form of his life, Aki fresh from a Lions tour. What about Brian's thoughts there on Ringrose and where he is in his career?
Yeah, I think there's been an awful lot of the outside backs outside of Johnny have kind of defaulted into a strike type of a player, in that they're not required to make an awful lot of decisions in this heads up rugby philosophy or whatever, you know, broken field running or broken field play. So it takes a bit of time to come back from that, and probably in the nicest way possible, you need to be very, very selfish at the right times to break yourself, you know, to stamp yourself on a game. And, you know, listening to Brian, and he was probably one of the best players at that an incredible team player, but at the right time was incredibly selfish. Like, how many times would you have seen him run behind a, you know, his own players looking for a gap? You know, that wasn't, you know, a bad pass. That was just him going, there's nothing on here, I'm gonna scoot off back that way. And a big part of the freedom to operate like that is in what your philosophy is and how you're set up and what your attitude to failure is and what your attitude to mistakes are. And I'd say that balance just feels a little bit off. Like, you know, is Gary Ringrose given this afforded the same freedom as, say, Henry Slade? Because they're very similar players. But yet Henry Slade seems to be given the ball and asked to create, whereas Gary Ringrose seems to be a cog in a machine. And I think that goes for pretty much everybody in the outside backs at the moment. And you talk about the comparison, say, between Bundy and Kieran Frawley. Like, what's the point in playing Kieran Frawley if he's going to be asked to carry? His value is in that second playmaker role. But if you're not going to set him up to play in that, why don't you play Bundy? And then the converse is, Bundy can pass and distribute as well as anybody there. It's not the prettiest thing is passing, but it's very, very effective. And I've seen him doing that time and time again for Connacht. So I do think there is a responsibility in the setup, and I suppose the philosophy first, how we're trying to approach the game. And the second bit then is how you're actually setting these guys up to perform. Because if it's still this, we still have a hangover from this overly prescribed way of playing that we were, you know, quite entrenched in up till 2018 and 2019. And there still seems to be tendencies in players' behaviours on the pitch.
Yeah, which I guess is not surprising. Keith, I'll read to you what Gordon said in his piece this morning about what he thinks on Saturday, and you can pick up on it. On Saturday, I suspect a tight Irish win on the back of a game narrow in orientation. In my gut, this will feel like a loss.
Yeah, that's an interesting one, Gordon. Look, it's funny, I agree what he's just said on philosophy. I don't think we have a philosophy to play the game as we see it in front of us. We still have the philosophy of manoeuvring our way into strike moves that function. And it's funny, I don't see Bundy as the playmaker, even though I know he has the skills. It isn't his first natural thought. And I don't think it should be. Look at the bloody size of him. I think you want that as a natural thought one in every five times, and that will keep everybody honest. I'd love to see a playmaker at 12. And for Gary Ringrose, I'm just upset for the fact that he was in a good vein of form and then he got injured and it's taken him a while to come back to that level of form. Like I keep wanting to ask a question about Johnny because of his influence that he has on this game. To how much has he changed from that guy from a good few years ago? And I know that the game has changed as well. And to how much we need him to be able to function closer to the gain line, and the fact that he may get injured in that side, as to whether that casts a view on how we play the game. I don't think we can play like Japan. I think there's very few teams in the world that have been given the latitude to offload at every single second. But they also had a year of training together before the World Cup to know that if they threw the ball, someone was going to be there. It was constant preparation for that style. And they have to play that style because they're not of the size to be able to compete with a lot more. But at the size they are, at the pace they play, with their handling, they are unbelievably difficult to play against. So for me, and I don't know the answer to this, it comes down to how much training they've had together in that period of time. It doesn't matter too much over how many matches they've played, but exactly how much training have they put in. And if they've put a lot of training in, if they've been in camp for a long period of time, I think it becomes a very tough game for us to win. And if it does go to that idea that that Gordon had said there, that it almost feels like a loss if we get a win like that, I don't know if it does. But I like, for me, I'd like to see a progression away and a change of the philosophy. So you can see it with young guys that play in the summer, but it's when the old guys, are they the ones that are willing to do it, and what is being said to them afterwards? If they're trying, it's not 50-50. That 50-50 ball idea is a very archaic thought. Is it on, is it not on? That's a decision that you're making at that moment in time. that's entirely different to a philosophy of being able to move the ball and knowing the players are going to run onto it. If you're guessing whether somebody's going to be there, you have to hold on to it. You know, you can't pass it. And I hope we're making a progression. It's not the idea to change it entirely. We will never play like Japan, nor should we, I believe. But we do need to make a progression. And one last point, just on Dricko being selfish, making the decisions that he wanted to do, the right decisions. He always had the latitude to do that because of the quality of what he had and what he was able to do. And I used to always love watching Dan Carter and latterly Beauden Barrett, that they'll have a go, but they'll pass, and they'll see one chink out of the line and they'll do something entirely individualistic because they had the skill to do it and then they had the pace to back it up. And that's something I think we're lacking at the moment, is that piece of pace.
Okay, fair point. Gordon, to give you a chance to expand on the one tiny quote I took from your entire piece, you did also say the road to success is paved with failure. Ireland, in terms of playing style, must have the courage to embrace that journey, potholes and all. Like, do you envisage if they were to really embrace that journey, it would result in some fairly tough losses for Ireland, to the extent that Farrell might be under big pressure again, because he was under big pressure, Six Nations just gone. Mike Catt was under big pressure. I do suspect they are quite result orientated at the moment still.
Yeah, well, like, you know, you look at the road Stephen Kenny's been on with Ireland, and at some point he just kind of went, and Leo Cullen probably did the same with Leinster, and just went, I need to get a certain group of players playing, and I need to see them, I need to understand if they can play, and then build a philosophy around them. And, you know, I think we've missed an opportunity with the squad we picked for this November series to genuinely experiment, but just to try and explore a different philosophy. And if that means losing a few games, and, you know, it's going to be tough. It's going to be a tough slog against New Zealand and Argentina. And maybe we may have had to cough up a loss against Japan. But if they were able to defend that process to go, well, listen, X, Y, and Z have come in. I wanted to see them. This is what we're building to. And you get a bounce back in the Six Nations. You know, that becomes really, really, really powerful. And then you're going, you know, there's 12, 13 games then out to the World Cup. You're starting to build some momentum in from that. Like when we lost to New Zealand in 2013, you know, the lessons we learned in that block of games, we absolutely carried it through to the 2014 Six Nations and actually and helped win. Like we cannot continue to win games and expect to learn what the next generation of players are made of. Like you learn the most about players in the toughest times. And if you're playing to win in every game, you're going to have tough times, absolutely, because you can't win every game. But the failure or the mistakes, they need to be building towards something. And my fear is that there isn't enough, that we won't have learned enough, but we're still going to make some mistakes in this series.
Okay. As a matter of interest, who would you be throwing in over the next couple of weeks? Who are you disappointed not to see in that Irish squad and team, maybe?
Like, I'm really disappointed not to see Jack O'Donoghue in there from a Munster perspective. Like, Ben Healy, Jack Crowley hasn't played enough. Ben Healy, you know, what's good for Harry Byrne should have been good for Ben Healy. You know, an extra player in there, the fourth, you know, if you want to pick a fourth out half, he should be in there. He should be featuring at some point. He has the right age profile. He's big. Somebody in the like Finlay Beelam, again, like he seems to have been tested at this level, maybe for the other two games, for some of the games. But like Jack Ainger, somebody like that we need to be seeing him at this level. Stuart Moore up north, again, have we seen, and like we've seen what Stuart McCluskey can do at this level. I would have been really keen to see what Stuart Moore could do, because he's played an awful lot of footy up there. And McCluskey hasn't played an awful lot, so there's just a couple off the top of the head.
Okay, so you're predicting tight win for Ireland, Keith. What would your prediction be without even seeing the teams? I appreciate.
Yeah, without seeing the teams, I still think Ireland will win, but I think it will be very tight. But for me, it's the interest of the conversation. And if you go back on all the points of where we've got passionate about over the last few years, it's been about the fact that, yes, we've won different games. How come we're not celebrating it? Because we haven't been progressing that much with some of them. So it's trying to see it. I mean, for me, it's funny because you can look at the team, go back to the word philosophy again. You look at the team, the squads, or the players that we have in the squad at the moment. If we have Craig Casey in the squad, why would you have him box kicking? I mean, that's the view that I would put on it. You'd want him. He's fast. He's rushing around the place. He is causing a bit of confusion for defensive setup because he likes to have a little bit of a cut. But if he's slowing things down, then I know we're doing something wrong. And we've had that a bit in Munster where it's slow it down, slow it down. We need, every other team seems to be speeding it up. And the reason for slowing it down in the past was to get a good kick, good box kick in the air with a very fair competition, one against one. Well, that competition is now gone. There's more interference that runs between the kicker and the ball and the guy jumping into it. It's never one against one anymore. And so that your likelihood of getting the ball back has diminished heavily. So there are things that need to change. For me, it's how do we step out onto the field? How do we play? What level of independence is there in our thinking?
Okay, well, we'll watch all that with interest. We'll finish on the most important story, really, which is Carl Heyman, just 41 years of age. I mean, we're talking about a superstar name here, 45 tests with the All Blacks, 3 European Cups with Toulon for a time, rumoured to be the highest paid player in the world, and retired maybe 5-6 years ago. He has been diagnosed with early onset dementia and probable CTE as well, and he is joining that class action against World Rugby, which consists of about 150 players at most recent count. Gave an extraordinary interview, which is just shocking and awful, and any other adjective you want to throw at it, to be honest. So he says, in advance of the diagnosis, I spent several years thinking I was going crazy. At one stage, that's genuinely what I thought. It was the constant headaches and all of these things going on that I couldn't understand. He reckons across his 450 games and 17-year career and all the training sessions that there were 150,000 sub-concussive knocks. He doesn't think he had a ton of concussions across his career, but the sub-concussive blows obviously accumulate and do their damage. So his symptoms began as playing days were winding down. His life started to spiral, is what he said. The headaches were the start. They were something that kept getting worse over time. I was waking up daily with a constant headache at various levels that never really goes away. I started having substantial memory issues. I was trying to get a passport for my son. I couldn't remember his middle name, which was a significant moment. I was searching around for it in my mind for a good 25 seconds and I had to go, I'm really sorry, I've forgotten, to the person on the phone trying to do the passport. I've forgotten my son's name. Said I had temper issues. Definitely. And then at this point in my life, it led down the track to what I consider alcohol abuse. I'd always enjoyed a beer with the boys, but at this point I began drinking more. I didn't know what was going on. Drinking brought a little bit of an escape for a certain amount of time. It would temporarily alleviate the symptoms somewhat. But then, as you can imagine, the next day things would go back to how they felt before, if not worse. His marriage broke down. On one occasion, there was an incident of domestic violence and there was a suspended prison sentence handed down. He said, and he expressed huge regret around this, I'm not an angry person, but I was in a deep, dark place. Unfortunately, I'll have to carry that with me forever. Daily suicidal thoughts for a period. He's currently living in New Zealand now with his new partner. And just a final quote. As time has gone on, it's become more apparent that the symptoms are those related to CTE injuries, memory loss, anxiety, anger, depression, alcohol abuse. Recently, I've had head spins and get tongue-tied and find it difficult to find the right words in the first place. End quote. Gordon, this guy's of your generation. I mean, it's just shocking.
Yeah, he's the same age as me. And it's, you know, and I've got over 350 games. Like, every time I see this, I toured with Steve Thompson, these guys, I know all of them, played against all of them, and I get quite emotional about it because, like, we all shared the field together with the best intentions and what we hoped was the safest. We had, you know, everything that was going on around us, and, like, and I still worry that, you know, you're not out of the woods. You know, you're just, like, going, because there's nothing you can do now. it's just a waiting game. And every time I hear a story like this and I hear something like this, I get really, really emotional. I get worried, I get scared about it. Because it's a life sentence for these players, and it's not what rugby is about. And this is a really, really horrible byproduct of the game. And it's deeply troubling. And it keeps me awake at night.
Does it? Yeah, right. Because you'd be one of those players. I would associate it stupidly with maybe forwards being more at risk. But I guess you're as likely to have those moments of being tackled and, you know, that bit of whiplash effect. So I can see how it would cross your mind for sure.
Yeah. Well, Dan Scarborough. He's joined that class. He's a winger. And again, I played a Legends game against him a couple of years ago, and salt of the earth, one of the nicest men you're ever likely to meet, and that absolutely blew me away. And it's everything is in perfect view in hindsight. What is this? Hindsight is perfect. It's 20/20 vision. You go back, you look at things, and you go, should you have played on? Should you have not played on at the time? You know, the expectation, the culture was get up, get on with it. You know, if you're not dead, get back in the line. And that's the world we operated in. And there's a group of players who are really paying a heavy price, and there isn't a silver lining for those players. There is going to be a silver lining for the next generation that come through, but these guys are paying a heavy toll for people, you know, for everybody's safety. And it's brutally not fair.
Yeah. Keith.
Yeah, look, it's incredibly harrowing to read those comments from Carl. I never played against him, and he's 8 or 9 years younger than me. But when you're looking at this and the case that's happening, there are so many players, and it's whether the case can hold up to scrutiny, whether but by the looks of it, there's so many players that seem to be affected by it, and whether that's down to other parts of their life or down to the game or down to every single thing. When I look and listen to a player again, as Gordon has said, that played the game that we loved so much, what does World Rugby have to do at this present moment in time to make certain that the game can be safe? And I think there is a recognition, and was a recognition, that rugby was tough. It's always very tough. It's always been very tough. But there needs to be an understanding of the risks as to how safe different elements of it are. So I think an awful lot has changed. I would have the same. It's funny, I don't stay awake at night thinking I'll have it. And I would have taken a fair few knocks in my time. But I think when you're looking at it for in a professional arena, and when you're looking at the amount of training that people are having to go to, you're looking at the changes that have to be made to the game. I now find where I struggle with it is I wince looking at some of the hits. I wince looking at some of the contact. There used to be space in a rugby field, and for the most part, you'd be trying to run to a soft shoulder or to space. There's very little space there at the present moment in time. So look, I think World Rugby is trying to make the changes. Whether they're ever going to be good enough and total enough to get rid of all risk from it, I don't believe it will.
No.
And I think that this is part and parcel of playing a highly competitive physical sport. Look, I think it goes down to a whole variety of other conversations over the length of the season, over the amount of games that you're playing. Ger Gilroy and I have kind of argued this toss on this for a long time, over 17 or 20 matches in a NFL season for a very professional sport. And yet that's over 20 weeks. And whereas your rugby is over nearly 50 weeks, or it was 52 weeks last season. You know, which is kind of mad. So there doesn't seem to be any respite. So I don't know. I mean, we have to follow the science, and we have to hope that the science will lead itself to making certain none of this happens again. And But all you can have actually is sympathy for the guys that are coming out of this. I mean, not knowing the name of your child is pretty horrendous stuff.
Yeah, I think that's the bottom line here. It's for the generation that are suffering now. There's no real silver lining, as Gordon said, no real consolation. The current situation, I'm sure people are equally interested in. Obviously, return to play protocols have been a big issue for the last couple of years. The most recent development was in September when World Rugby issued guidelines around reducing contact in training, including limiting full contact, for instance, 15 minutes per week or 40 minutes controlled contact using tackle shields and pads and so on, 30 minutes of live set piece training per week, line out scrums and mauls at high intensity. So those guidelines are in. They're just guidelines at the moment. They could well be mandated, is the word, in order to compete at the next World Cup. So that is where we are. And the scientific basis behind those number of minutes is maybe a piece we should do at some stage over the next couple of weeks. But gents, we're out of time. Yes, yeah, sorry, Gordon, shoot.
Just yeah. On the technology, I think the technology piece as well, I think, you know, NFLV at World Rugby as well,
yeah,
they're looking at gum shields with sensors in them and things like that. So there are other pieces as well, and the subjectivity and the objectivity around concussions is a bit that's missing, and they are desperately trying to define that, which again removes that, you know, is a player, you know, when they should really leave the field. So there is more going on in the background that rather than just arbitrary numbers being picked out. So it is worth, you know, this is driving a change.
Yes. I heard, name escapes me, it was a Harlequins player who was in training with that gum shield. They were trialing it and he thought it was a fairly generic training session, not much in it. And they came over to him afterwards and said, have you seen, God, you took some serious impacts there. And he was thinking, did I really? And it was that thing of bringing the ball to the gain line, late pass, and it was the whiplash effect that had put the force through his head. And, you know, that's an eye-opener for him.
Yep.
So we'll talk about it again, unfortunately, I suspect. Gordon D'Arcy, thank you very much. Appreciate it, Gordon.
Thanks, guys.
Keith, thanks a mil.
Cheers, gents.
Keith Wood there as well. And just before we wrap up Wednesday Night Rugby for the evening, pair of tickets to see Ireland against Japan this Saturday up for grabs. The question, if you're listening closely to the chat, shouldn't be too difficult. Which Ireland player set to win his 100th cap this weekend? Name and answer to 53106. And if you miss out on the prize, you can still get tickets for the game. Check out irishrugby.ie for more details.
Wednesday Night Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us, everyone in.